Today actually is probably one of the best talks that one can have on Karma Yoga. I got it from the book and from some talks by Swami Tejomai Nandaji. It's very inspired. I hope you will be too after listening to this. So in the first two verses, we heard that doing actions creates a sense of ego, that I am the doer. But then the result doesn't depend on me. It depends on other forces, depends on other people, depends on the Lord. But I get this sense of I and my and the doership, and that's what binds us. That's what gets us caught. And in the second verse, we had heard last week that these actions are like an ocean. We just keep on working, 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 and I'm drowning in this work. I don't see any way out. And in the process of working, I get so caught up. I get so caught up in selfishness and ego and all that, that I go downward. Why? Because the results of action is temporary. Nothing is permanent, no matter what I do. And so doing temporary actions, I'm looking for a permanent result. And that does not happen. And so we are just caught in this actions, working from morning to night. I don't know why I'm working, what I am doing, just working for me and myself. And such actions bind us. But the first question is, am I independent or am I bound? Can actions really bind me? I feel that I'm trapped and I have so much work, I just can't get out. You don't know how much work I have. Even when I go home, I work. And so we feel trapped. But can actions really bind us? Or am I independent of the action? That is the first question before we even discuss the verse. It is interesting. I create the action and then I get bound. Right? I do something and then I feel bound. I take up a job or build a house and I feel trapped. I can stay independent of action. Right? If I decide, okay, I'm not going to build a house. Can anybody force me to build a house? Or if I decide I'm not going to do this or that. Can anyone force me? No. I myself decide to do something and then I get caught. So it is interesting. I can stay without the actions. Action cannot occur without me. Action cannot occur by itself. A house cannot be built by itself. A car cannot be bought by itself. I have to go and buy a car. So I do the action and then I get bound. Example is thoughts. Now, I create thoughts in my mind, right? I give power to the thoughts. Can thoughts be created by themselves? If I was asleep in deep sleep, would there be any thought? Or if I was under anesthesia, would there be any thought? No. When I'm awake, I create thoughts. But then when thoughts come in my mind, you say, my mind is stressing me out. I have so many stressful situations. So I create the thoughts and then I get bound in those thoughts. And then I go to a psychiatrist and I say, I want some Valium or I want some Xanax or Prozac. I can't sleep. Why? Because the thoughts keep running in my mind. Who created the thoughts? Did the thoughts come of their own? Did God, somebody or government or somebody send thoughts? No. You are lying in the bed and you are creating your own thoughts. And then you're saying, oh, thoughts are a problem for me. Thoughts are a bondage. Or a house, you know, we buy a house and then after a while, house becomes a problem. I have to maintain it. I have to pay the mortgage. I can't leave because why? You know, because who is going to take care of the house? If I go on a trip, I worry about somebody will steal it. Somebody will break in. Pet, that's a prime example. We go and get a dog or a cat. You know, now nobody forced you to get one, right? So you get a dog. And then what happens? I can't go anywhere. Why? Because who's going to feed my dog? Who's going to walk my dog? Who's going to take care of my dog? Dog, dog, dog. And that becomes the, you know, I'm not saying that one shouldn't have pets, but that becomes a bondage. Then when you go on a trip, then you have somebody to dog sit. So somebody comes and stays in your house. Why? For your dog or for your house. Children, that's another prime example. You know, we create our own children, right? And then once he becomes a teenager, oh my God, so much bondage. So many problems. How did that happen? Because we give power to that object to bind us, whether it's a house, whether it's our thoughts, whether it's our dog, whether it's our child. And the main reason we get bound is because of the ego, because it is I and mine. Like it is my house, it is my job, it is my child, it is my pet. When the I and my come in, that's when the problem arises. Otherwise, you say, okay, I took care of the child, I taught him the best. Now, whatever he does, it is his choice, his response. Why do I have to get affected by that? Or, it's okay, I have a house, but I don't have to have the sense of identification. Tomorrow, if something happens and I don't have the house, it's okay. It was not meant to be. But when I say it is me, we have such a strong identification with our house or with our car. If somebody scratches the car, oh, we can't sleep for 3 days. You know, why? Because I think the car is me. So when you identify with any object and thinking it is me or my child, it's the same thing. I get so attached to the child. Anything happens to the child is happening to me. Child is somewhere in St. Louis or in New York and something bad happens. Oh, I can't sleep. You know, you did your best. You brought up the child. Now she's on her own. Let her live her life. Why do I have to interfere in the life? Why do I have to get so involved? Why do I have to? So when the I and my comes, that is when the problem arises. So all problems arise because of ego. Like to give an example, a soldier. Now when he shoots somebody in the army in the war, you know, he shoots 10, 12 soldiers. You know, they find some enemy and then he's surrounded and then he hides in a bunker and he kills a lot of them. They give him a Purple Heart. They give him a medal, right? Because why? For the protection of the country. And there he wasn't doing it for his personal glory or for his personal, you know, happiness that I'll be happy by killing these 10 or 12. No, my country needs me and I'm here fighting a war, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever I am. I'm fighting for the glory of my country. And in that process, even if I have to kill some enemy, it's okay. It's not for my own glory because my country needs me. And there he gets a medal. But if the same soldier came home and then his neighbor, he didn't get along with him and he took the same gun that he had in the army and shot him, he would be arrested. He would be put in jail. He would get even the death penalty. Why? Because then it is me. He's my neighbor. He's my enemy. So when the I and my come, that's when the problems arise. The ego, when it arises, when something is done for a higher cause, then such an action is considered as noble. Even though it may appear bad, okay, he killed 10 people, but because he did it to protect the country, that action is considered noble. So when are we bound? When the ego comes in there. Otherwise, I am independent of the action. So now we know what actions bind us. So egocentric actions where I and my come. So let us now read the verse which will expand further on this karma yoga or what is actions performed without ego. So verse number 3 on page number 9. Ishwar arpitam nechaya kritam. Pitam nechaya kritam. Chitta shodhakam mukti sadhakam. Chitta shodhakam mukti sadhakam. So what is karma yoga? What is actions? That is what we call as karma yoga. Ishwar arpitam. Ishwar means Lord. Arpitam means offer to the Lord. So actions that are dedicated to the Lord. Na ichchaya kritam. Ichcha means desire. So actions performed without selfish desires. Kritam means actions performed without selfish desires. So unselfish actions dedicated to the Lord is called karma yoga. So actions that are done unselfishly dedicated to the Lord. And how do they help us? Chitta shodhakam. They purify the mind. Chitta is mind. Shodhakam means purify the mind. And mukti sadhakam. Mukti is liberation. Sadhak means becomes a means for liberation. So, unselfish actions dedicated to the Lord purify the mind and help us in liberation. So, let us study each part of this verse. First point is there is a difference between karma and karma yoga. Karma is actions. Karma yoga, yoga means that is united with the Lord. Yoga comes from yuj to unite. So actions that are united with the Lord. But people have this idea that if I work many hours, I'm a karma yogi. And you know, you ask some people, why don't you come to the lectures? He says, I'm a karma yogi. I believe in work. I don't believe in listening to these lectures or reading books. I work from 6 a.m. to, you know, 8 p.m. That's not karma yoga. That may be work. It may be action, but it's not karma yoga. And people have this wrong idea, especially in India and all. They say, he's a great karma yogi. They say, why? Oh, he works from 6 a.m. till 8 p.m. That's not karma yogi. If that was the case, then even a smuggler would be a karma yogi, right? Because the smugglers work late at night. You know, they work all bank robbers. They work from morning to night. They're planning. Sometimes they're up all night. They're casing the bank and checking out, you know, how to steal. Or the smuggler is finding all the ways to bring things. And so he's working days on end. He would be considered a karma yogi or a gambler. You know, gamblers, especially when you go to Vegas, there are some people who come in on Friday and leave on Sunday, and they play constantly. Only time they get up is to go to the bathroom or to eat. From Friday evening till Sunday morning, they don't even leave to go to sleep. Then that he would be a karma yogi, right? He's working from Friday to Sunday. No, actions are not automatically become karma yoga. So karma is not karma yoga. What is karma yoga? What is karma yoga? They say that actions that are done without desire. Now, what do we mean by actions done without desire? Without desire, nothing can happen. Like today, you had the desire to learn about meditation. You came here, I had the desire to speak about meditation. So no actions can be done without desire. What does he mean by actions done without desire? So the answer is that, say I am single, I am living by myself, and I have a good job, I have a good salary, I have a nice house. Then what is my goal in life? To take care of myself. I don't worry about my neighbor, my boss, maybe you know, parents a little bit, but mostly what is my idea? Keep myself happy, comfortable, enjoy life, eat, drink, be merry, travel. Okay, I'm happy. But then this person gets married. You know, then now he has to start thinking about his wife. You know, previously he could stay out till 10, 11 at night. Now he says, you know, his wife will be waiting at home, so I cannot stay out late. So 6 o'clock he comes home, and then he gets children, and then slowly his ego expands. You know, his I and my expands. Now it's my family. So for the sake of his family, he will even sacrifice. You know, previously he wanted anything. He would just go out and buy a new set of golf clubs, buy a new latest phone or a stereo. Now he says, no, I can't afford it. Why? Because my child needs money for school, or I have to save for his college, or I have to, buy a bigger house when I need for more children. So slowly the ego, his selfishness increases, and he becomes more I and my increases. Now my family. So similarly, when the actions expand even further, where he joins a church or a particular community, and he says, you know, I'm on the board of the church. So now he's working for the organization, for that church, for that maybe a Rotary or a Boy Scouts or a Boys and Girls Club, some organization where he's doing volunteer work, where now his focus is not only on me and my family, but what is good for the organization. And through the organization, I should serve more people. So his desire is widening. It's not that he doesn't have desire, but instead of only taking care of me and my comfort, his desire is now, I should benefit the community. I should work for the city of Bakersfield. Say he becomes a member of the city council or some, you know, social service organization. So increasing our width of service, our identification, then he says, I'm a citizen of Bakersfield, so I need to do what is good for the city, not only what is good for my street or for my, some people think only think about my street or my community. No, I have to do what is good for the whole city. And similarly, as he expands, he becomes a senator or becomes a president. He thinks, you know, I must do what is good for the whole country. Not only what is good for my state of Minnesota or Alaska, but what is good for the whole United States. And the greatest, of course, are the saints who become one with the whole world. And they say, I am a citizen of this world. And so what is good for all is good for me. They go beyond the boundaries of a country or a state or a family. A lot of times they even give up their family, give up their community. Why? Because they're working for the benefit of all. So as you widen your identification, your selfishness reduces, you become more. So the desire is still there, but now it is a desire for the upliftment of all. And that's what the spiritual seekers, because they say through my growth, spiritual growth, everybody will benefit. And so what it does is it gives them an inspiration, because we find in companies, you know, people work sometimes just for my own growth, you know, my own advancement. I should become the vice president. I should become the CEO. And so he will work for his own growth, and he will even step on others and hurt others to be grow. But if he's truly inspired that I have to do what is good for the company, then it doesn't matter whether he's not doing it for a personal growth or a personal promotion. He may get it, but his idea is I have to do what is good for the company. Why? Because the company gives me a job. The job I have is given by the company, or if he is given by the government, say he's an employee of the government, then the company or the government that has given me the job, I have to work unselfishly. If he's truly inspired, then he will work for the benefit of the company, benefit of the government, and he will honestly and sincerely perform his duties. Why? Because the company has given me a job, it has given me a car, I have a house, everything I have is because of the company. So they develop an attitude of gratitude, especially we find in not so much in the US, but in Europe and all. People, they work for one company right from birth to death. Or even here, like some of the people who work in the coal industry, birth to death, they work for the same company. Their son, their grandson, all have been working for the same company. So they develop a sense of identification. So when I have this much gratitude to a company that has given me a job, how about God who has given me everything? My ability to see, my ability to hear, my ability to talk, my ability to walk, my intellect, my body, my mind, my intellect, all my thoughts, everything has been given to me by God. Even he has given me birth, he has given me this body. So how much more should be our gratitude to God? As we are grateful to our company or grateful to an employer, so much more grateful I should be to God. And so what should happen is, just as a person truly inspired works for the benefit of the company, so my attitude should be that I am working for God. I am a servant of God. I am here because of him. It is his pleasure that I should, whatever I should do, is God going to be pleased with it? This activity that I am doing, is God going to be pleased? First of all, you should think, are you pleased? Are you happy? Are you truly inside happy? If you have done something which is illegal, immoral, corrupt, or which is hurtful, which you have shouted at somebody or cheated somebody, you won't feel good about it yourself. You may get a monetary gain. You may temporarily be happy, but inside you will know that. So if I am not happy with my action, how can God be happy? So my goal should be that whatever action I should do, God should be pleased with me. And I and my should not be there. I am a humble servant of God. I am here because he has placed me here. So every day I should do some activity which A, should be done unselfishly for the benefit of others, and B, which as a dedication to God, as a humble service of God. Because the moment I or my come, even as people say, you know, working for a temple or working for a social organization is great. Yes, it is good. But just everybody who works in a temple, every priest is not a servant of God. Some of them have a great ego, you know, that my temple should be more powerful, or my church should be more powerful. I should have more followers than the church across the street. And same thing in social service. Some people are genuinely interested in serving the world. Some people think through social service, I'll become so well known. I'll become so popular that tomorrow when I stand for election, everybody will vote for me. So just because you are doing social service, or just because you are a priest in a temple or a church, automatically does not make you a servant of God. It is good. I'm not saying that everybody who works in a temple or a church, majority of the people are very humble, very noble. Most of the priests are very good people. Most of the people in social service are wonderful. But it does not guarantee it, because as long as the ego is there that I am doing it, it creates problem. Patanakaranam. It creates your downfall. So give up the ego that I am the doer. And once you give up the doership, then the enjoyership automatically falls. Because when I think I do something, then I want to enjoy the results. And when I don't get the results, I become miserable and I suffer. But once I give up the doership, I didn't do it, God did it through me, then whether I get it or not, it's His glory, it's not mine. I did my best, Lord. It's meant to, it's not that you don't do your best. You do your best, but you are not attached to the result. You do your best, you learn from your mistakes. But if despite all your efforts, it didn't succeed, it's okay. It's not meant to be. So once the doership is gone, then the enjoyership automatically falls. So that's what happens. That I am a humble servant of God. He has placed me here. And whatever I do is His work. It is His service. So then the question is asked, what do we mean by a humble servant of the God? Can you give us some practical examples? So they say that whatever job you have been assigned in, do it as His service. Like if I'm a pilot and flying a plane, I say all the passengers in my plane are God. God is riding in my plane. So it is my job to fly them. And so his flight becomes a service of God. He says it's God's work. A lady cooking in the house, she says God is there in my husband, my children, my guests, everybody who has come. When I'm cooking for God. So every action, a secretary sitting in an office and greeting, you know, receptionist, every customer who comes is God. So then she automatically becomes very polite, becomes very friendly. She greets everybody with a smile. And such an employee is valued. Oh, she's so nice. The customers love her. Why? Because she sees that God is there in every one of them. He is here. So every action of that individual becomes a service. If suppose, like you have abilities, you know, use your abilities to serve God. Like you can sing. Somebody can sing. So sing melodious songs, you know, sing beautiful hymns in praise of God. Compose beautiful poems or sing beautiful songs. Use your abilities to serve God. Talking about singing, these two men went to a concert. And this guy who was singing in the concert was long and very loud. So one guy says, he sings with feeling. So the other guy says, if he had any feelings, he wouldn't have sung. So singing should not be so loud and so, especially nowadays, if you go to rock concerts and all, you come back with hearing defect. You know, next day you need to go see an ENT doctor. Why? So that's not rock music and pop music and loud, you know, all this heavy metal. That's not. But if you can sing a melodious song in praise of God, or if you have memorized some beautiful hymns and just chant them to yourself. I try to do that, you know, listen to some good songs or some good mantras and memorize them so that when you play them in your mind, you are remembering God, you are thinking about His glory. So any good songs, any good hymns that you can memorize, memorization is very important, because when you are memorizing, your mind is focused on that. So memorize it and then apply. And if you can compose, like now Raman Maharishi, the author of this text, he could compose. So he composed this beautiful hymn in praise of God. And then the one who wrote the commentary, Swami Tejomayananda, his ability to write, they did it for God. So your ability can be used for personal gain. You could write a novel and a bestseller and make millions, Robert Ludlum or this and that. Or you could write a beautiful spiritual text where so many people can benefit from it. And he has done it as a service to God. So use your abilities and don't think about what is my gain. Because most of the time people think, what did I get out of it? You know what? As Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. So don't think, what can society do for me? Or what can country do for me? Or what can my company do for me? No, what can I do for my country? What can I do for my society? What can I do to make my company better? So my gain is not my personal gain, but the gain of all. Everybody should benefit. That is called true karma yoga. And then it says, such actions, karma yoga, chitta shodakam, they purify the mind. How do they purify the mind? So they say our mind is full of likes and dislikes. I like to do this. I hate to do this. I like this person. I hate this person. I want this. I don't want this. I'm running towards this. I'm running away. So our constant in our life, we are running towards things we like and running away from things we dislike. And what we like, we want more and more. What we dislike, we want to run away. So we develop hatred, we develop greed, we develop selfishness. I want more of what I like. And then I get angry when I don't get it. Or what I don't like comes to me, then I get, you know, depressed. So all our likes and dislikes create all our problems. They pollute our mind and they cause more vastness, more selfish desires. So as you work for others, work unselfishly, give up your personal likes, then automatically your likes and dislikes reduce. Then I'm not working for because I like this or I don't like it. If my company assigned me to do it, I do it, whether I like the job or I don't like the job. God has placed me in this situation, I do what is the best to my ability, whether I like the work or I don't like the work. So then once you reduce your likes and dislikes, then automatically your anger reduces, your hatred, your jealousy, your greed, your competitiveness, your selfishness, your wanting to take what the other person wants, all of that reduces. So a mind that is free of likes and dislikes becomes a pure mind. A mind that is not polluted with all negativity. So the more I work unselfishly, the more I think of God, the purer my mind. That's why they say you just turn your mind. Swami Chinmayananda, the founder of the mission, says turn your mind in devotion to the Lord. He will purify it and return it back to you. So think about God. It doesn't matter what form, what name, what shape, what book, what building, but think about God. And he will purify your mind and return it back to you. So a pure mind can only do self-inquiry. Mukti sadhakam becomes a means for liberation. Because at this moment, I am bound because I don't know who I am. I think myself to be this body, mind, intellect, and I suffer the consequences. But as I reduce my selfishness, as I reduce my vastness, my mind is now free to inquire. I am free to sit and think, who am I? What is this world? Who is God? Why was the world created? Why was I sent here? What is the purpose of my birth? And when I sit for meditation, then I can contemplate, then I can meditate. But if my mind is full of jealousy, greed, hatred, anger, and I sit for meditation, my mind doesn't stay in one place. Why doesn't my mind not stay in one place? Because it has too many desires, too much selfishness, too much disturbance. So quieten the mind, work with an attitude of karma yoga, go beyond I and mine, work as a servant of the God. He has given me everything. I work for his pleasure. All my abilities are used in his service. And such a person, his mind becomes pure. Chitta shodakam, his mind becomes pure, free of likes and dislikes. And only a pure mind can meditate. Only a pure mind can inquire. Otherwise, you are just sitting and it's still good. I'm not saying it is bad to sit, but the purer your mind becomes, the more you become pure, the more your mind is in service, the quieter it becomes, the less disturbance. And such a person only can really progress in meditation, can progress in spirituality. It's a beautiful, beautiful verse. So thankful I could share this with you. Whatever I have studied is from, you know, teachings of my guru, and I think it's something we should all think about again and again, because it's a very wonderful text. Yeah. Any comments?
It's sort of like God lets us right. Do the things in the world. So I mean, didn't have an ego over the fact that we have a certain possession, mm-hmm. lifestyle, or whatever.
Right.
It's really kind of silly. But again, it's having the knowledge that
there is a different way to look at it. True. Or saying that I'm thankful to God that he gave me the ability to, you know, buy such a house or gave me such a house. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, then you can, or you don't have to tell that person. In your mind, you can express gratitude. Right. Right.
And also, sometimes with children, you know, they feel so entitled because their dad has...
Right, and people keep accumulating and they die before even using the money. They spend their whole life and then they die and then the money gets... goes to the government in wealth estate tax. Right.
People lost their terms like that.
Yes.
Like,
identify with something that may not even be there. So.
No, you're right. Absolutely.
We like to have people stay at our house. So we have various people that live there that can't afford their house, or but they like to help out. So if it's like a commune,
mm-hmm.
where people help each other, and I think that's really useful, and it's similar to not having it for ourselves. We like to share, and I just think it works among group of people as much as it does for an individual. That's the way it works.
No, it's very true. Yeah, that's what I said. Anytime a community can get together and work for the benefit of all, whether it's a church or a community, that's very good. Yeah, if you can share your belongings and get more people to help each other, that's very good. That is karma yoga too. That is unselfish, where you're not working for your personal benefit, but for the benefit of others.
I don't think that I have them there just to feed the dogs. But it is handy.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, no, I'm not against keeping pets and all. What I'm saying is they shouldn't become a bondage. It shouldn't become a means where you get so trapped in that. That's what I mean.
But I think when other people are involved, it's also valuable. It's broader and it feels more.
Oh, yes.
That's what I was trying to picture that.
Right. No, that's true. Like even a charitable organization where people get like a Red Cross or Boys and Girls Club, where people get together and truly sink their individual differences and work like, you know, there's an earthquake somewhere or there's a, you know, flood. And so when the people fly out and help as a whole organization, then you need an organization to, you know, like a Red Cross to go and take planes and tents and all that. An individual couldn't do it. You know, one person cannot do it, but an organization that can help. So, yeah, organizations can be, being part of an organization also can be karma yoga, definitely.
And I wonder, I mean, I know it's gratifying to see them doing better.
Mm.
But I don't think that's my ego, but I know they feel gratified when they can chip in and help.
Good.
So that's not ego, that's more contribution.
Yeah, sharing.
Yeah, sharing.
Yeah, no, that's
maybe
good.
That's the term.
Right, that's very good. Yeah, anytime you can help others without any personal agenda, then that's good. And you can expand that, you know, inspire other people to do it, make it a bigger commune, you know, get 2-3 homes, you know, so you can expand on that as it grows. Good. That's very good. I think for a leader, first of all, once they become a leader, say he becomes the president of the country, then he should no longer think I'm a Democrat or a Republican. I'm the president of the entire country, number one. So his partisanship should reduce. That's number one. Number two, when he's a president or a leader, say he could be even the mayor of the city or the governor of the state, if he is becoming a governor of California only so that, A, maybe he should acquire more money, you know, people can give me gifts or get money. You know, some people become powerful to get more money or to become more powerful so that, oh, by becoming governor of California, making myself famous, then I can become president. So his whole work as a governor is not for the benefit of the state of California, but A, for his personal benefit, how can I get more money or how can I become more powerful to become president, then that leader is not a good leader. But if he works that, okay, I am a governor of California, my goal is to make California better. So when I leave 4 years or 8 years from now, people should say, okay, there came this governor who did so much good for the country, so much good for the state. So when a person works with that attitude, without the attitude of I and mine, without the even attitude of my party, what is good for the state, what is good for the country, then such a leader can also practice karma yoga. He has to do his duties and responsibilities. He has to be a leader of the military. He has to do the economics, the finance, and all those things he has to do. But while he is doing all his duties, A, he picks the right people, not people who will, you know, just because they were my buddies, but who is the best for the job? If I am president, I pick the best defense secretary, secretary of commerce, secretary of health. I pick the best people and then I do allow them to work, and I work inspired that I am working for the nation and the people around me also. So then such a person is remembered, like we all remember Kennedy. Even though he was a president for a short while, we find that he had a lot of dynamism and he did a lot of things that were good for the country, while other presidents come and go and nobody even remembers them. Why? Because they didn't do anything special. We remember George Washington or Abraham Lincoln or Thomas Jefferson. Why? Because these people were visionaries. They were thinking about Jawaharlal Nehru in India or Mahatma Gandhi, so Martin Luther King. So these people who are leaders, but they are visionaries. Their vision is beyond I and my and what is good for the community, what is good for all. So when people work with that kind of vision, then they get remembered. Then they become true leaders. And so that is the difference between a politician and a leader. A politician is there only for, you know, his personal gain or for the gain of his party. But a true leader is there for the benefit of all. So that's how even a leader can become a Karma Yogi.